And I want you to all have a lot of perseverance, patience with me, because I'm really dyslexic and I cannot read and speak at the same time. And the message today is so historic, I think, and so critical that I felt it was necessary to do a PowerPoint, something I really have never done here. And I don't know if it'll help or if it'll hurt, because usually I just go for 2 hours. And I mean, you ask me how the weather is in the Pacific Northwest, and I'll give you a 3-hour diatribe on Islam. So today's message is difficult for me because I'm doing something I'm not used to doing, that is preaching the Bible. In other words, the Bible in a way that no Jew has ever preached it, and I think in a way that no Christian has ever preached it either. And we're going to be breaking ice here tonight. This is a whole new approach to things that I know you've read many times in Genesis and in Exodus and in Numbers and in Deuteronomy and in Mark and in Revelation and in Matthew. I've done 6 taped messages here. I did the Legacy of Hate and Sleeping in America, which were about Islamic terroristic threat to the United States. I did a teaching on Europe called the New Crusades. I did a teaching on Israel called Israel's Bible Block. I did a teaching on Iran, on the war that I'm sure is coming literally at any day with Iran. I could give you an update now of 2 hours just on the war that is approaching with Iran. I did a 2-hour teaching on the 2 houses of Islam, Shiites versus Sunnis, because these are things that people don't understand in America. People are not getting it in the media. And I did my most recent teaching at the conference a year ago, which was about Turkey and the Armageddon. So, you know, we're covering every time a different subject. The one thing that it has in common is the Islamic threat. The Islamic threat to Europe, to the United States, to the world, to the Jews, and the Islamic threat to the Muslims themselves. And, you know, I always issue the disclaimer that I love the Muslims. I don't hate them. Believe me, if I used to hate Germans and today I love Germans, how can I not love the Muslims? In other words, I love Germans, I'll fight Nazism. I love Russians, I'll fight communism. I love the Muslims, but I'll fight Islam to my last. There is a gentleman, by the way, not a gentleman, there are many, many people who hear about me through the millions of people who get the Koinonia House teachings. And I am greatly indebted to Chuck Missler for this ministry. I get an unbelievable support from people in many ways all over the world, people who get my teachings from Chuck Missler. The last 2 days, there has been a man frantically calling me. I won't reveal his identity for his own safety because he is working with the Saudi royal family. And he is an ex-Marine. And they talk about how they are working, how Saudi Arabia is working to bring about the economic downfall of the United States because they have your money, and when everything collapses, then they can buy it all back with fire sales. They're not only buying out banks and corporations and real estate and leaders, and they're buying out the whole world. By the way, I was in Kentucky a few times. You know, I've been in 46 of the 48 states of the continental United States, and there's not very much for me to report about Kentucky other than the horse races and the raising of horses. And when I was in Kentucky, they were saying that all the horse farms were being bought out by the Saudis because the Saudis love horses. I was just in Poland in April. By the way, I spoke before the Polish Army General Staff and intelligence officers. The Times of London has a branch in Poland, and so I did a panel with them. This was in the Polish newspapers. I can give it to anyone here who knows Polish. We took a train from Warsaw to Wrocław, and it stopped in a city called Poznan, which is on the German border. And in our cabin in the train was a gentleman who was reading an English language book, and we started talking with him. Turns out he raises horses in Poland. So I told him that in Kentucky, the Saudis were buying up all the horse farms. Oh, yeah, here in Poland also. The Saudis are buying up all the horse farms, and they're buying up a lot of other farms too so that they will have food because they're not raising the food in Saudi Arabia. So what they're doing is they're buying up agricultural land all over Europe and the United States in order to get the food that they need. So you are now being colonized by the Saudis. The war with Islam is a war on many levels. And again, we're not talking about Israel today. We're not talking about Europe today. We're not talking about Turkey. We're not talking about Iran. The message today is a biblical message about the role of Mecca and Medina. That's why the message is called The Case for Mecca. I want to go back a little bit, about 20 years or so. 20 years ago, when I began my second lifetime career, I was in business, if you remember, from 1976 to 1986, importing Teledyne water picks to Israel. And believe me, when God took away my business, I was a very happy man, because I did not see myself having moved to Israel to be the importer of Teledyne water picks to Israel. I felt that God had a bigger plan for me, and indeed he did, and praise God. 1991 to 1994, I had the opportunity to study for 3 years for an MA program at the Jewish Theological Seminary. I had, fantasies about becoming a conservative rabbi. In the end, because I was a member of the Likud and the so-called conservative movement is ultra-left, they basically terminated me there. And one of the reasons they terminated me is something we're going to talk about tonight. If you all know, Jewish people wear phylacteries and prayer shawl. I am not going to do the full thing tonight with the phylacteries and prayer shawl. We're going to do it a little later. But when I took out the phylacteries, and we were talking about how the phylacteries have been used by the Jewish people for 3,500 years. And for example, this is the hand phylactery. We also have a head phylactery. And almost as a joke, I said to my teacher and the people who were in my class, this looks like the Kaaba in Mecca. And we put it on our heads, between our eyes, and we put it for a sign on our arm. And they almost threw me out of seminary because they said, what is this, the Islamic Theological Seminary? We're Jews. We're not Muslims. I said, well, it looks like the Kaaba. I'm just looking at something that seems to be very plain, very obvious. And they asked me another question at another opportunity, what did I think about homosexual ordination? And I said, well, homosexuals do what they do, and they will be judged by God. It's not for us to judge them. By the way, Jesus said, judge not, lest thou be judged. Everything is between a person and God. But to be a rabbi or a priest or a pastor, one should not be a homosexual, because if you are a Christian or a Jew and you believe in the Bible describes homosexuality as an abomination worthy of a capital death sentence. So homosexuals should not be ordained. They can live as human beings and do what they do and be judged by God. That's my point. So that's another reason they almost threw me out of seminary. I have a problem. I don't know how to lie, and I don't know how to cover things up with political correctness. And this teaching this evening is the height of political incorrectness. 20 years go by, and I'm traveling in the south of the United States. This is 6 months ago. Every winter I suffer for Christ in Florida. By the way, a lot of Jews don't like it when they hear me say that. And in the summer, I suffer for Christ in the Pacific Northwest. And the Canadians get very angry with me when I'm asked what's my favorite city in the United States, and I say Vancouver, B.C. Beautiful city. And there is a couple that I keep running into, and they live in Escatawba, Mississippi. And their name is Jim and Penny Caldwell. Has anyone ever heard of them? Jim and Penny Caldwell? One hand? Okay, two hands. And I was actually with them a winter a year ago and said, we have a movie for you to see. I said, oh, you Christians, you're always witnessing to me. And you're always trying to show me movies and make me listen to things. And I'm tired. I want to go to bed tomorrow. I have to be in Texas. From Mississippi to Texas is about a six-hour drive legally. So last winter I was there, and they knew my schedule. They knew that I was leisurely the next day. So you're not going anywhere till you see this movie. And they showed me the movie, and it changed my life. And it's the reason we're doing the teaching tonight. Jim and Penny Caldwell are Americans. Actually, I think he works with the military there near Pascagoula with the Navy. And they were oil people. They were expats in Saudi for 14 years. Now, when you're an oil person in Saudi Arabia and you get all this vacation time, there's really not very much to do in Saudi Arabia with your free time. But they had a Land Rover, and they'd go camping out in the desert, put up a tent and go with their little kids. And And they started going from eastern Saudi to western Saudi, where Mecca and Medina are, and where the purported site of Mount Sinai is. By the way, the Jews do not know where Mount Sinai is. The Muslims do. And the Muslims say that the Jews are going to take it because it belongs to the Jews. But, of course, the Jews don't know where it is. And anyway, so I watched this movie, and I'm dying, because there's so much information there in this movie. And the movie will be coming out very soon. It has not been publicly screened yet. Now, there's another gentleman who's working with them. He's actually the boss. His name is Tim Mahoney. Has anyone heard of Tim Mahoney? Tim Mahoney, okay. And Pete Windall. And they're in Minneapolis. And I was just with them 3 weeks ago. And what I'm going to do tonight, I videotaped with them for the second and third parts of the movie. They're making a trilogy, three movies, about the exodus from Egypt. How many people know that the exodus from Egypt went to Arabia? Okay, I see some more hands now. So you're beginning to go in the direction of where I'm going. Now, I don't know how much of Judaism you guys know, but the Jews and the Christians share the Old Testament. Then with the advent of Jesus of Nazareth, you have the New Testament. And then the Jews felt there was a need to combat this with a new book which was written in 200 AD called the Mishnah, which is kind of a takeoff, Jewish takeoff on what Virgil did for the laws of Rome. The Mishnah is basically interpretations of things that are in the Old Testament. Then in the year 500, another whole compilation came out called the Talmud, which is an interpretation of the Mishnah and the Tanakh of the Old Testament. And the problem with the Talmud, with the Gemara, as the Jews call it, that bothers me the most is that it was written 120 years before Muhammad's time. In other words, if it's not in the Talmud, it's not something that rabbis deal with. So if Islam was formed in 622 AD and the Quran was, and the Talmud was compiled in 500 AD, so the Jewish people are, how shall I say, two-dimensional. They have the Torah, they have the Talmud, but they don't have any understanding of Muhammad and the Quran. And of course, actually, I would say one-dimensional, the two, because the New Testament is something Jews need to read too. And by the way, I get into a lot of trouble in the synagogues when I say that the Jews should read the New Testament. They say, we don't read the Old Testament. Why should we read the New Testament? And I also say to them, you need to go to church on Sunday. They say, we don't go to synagogue on Saturday. Why should we go to the church on Sunday? That's the kind of people I have to deal with. And by the way, how many people remember the movie Patton? Do you remember the part where Patton is looking through his binoculars and the American army is pulverizing Rommel's army and he says, Rommel, I read your book. And, you know, you need to read the book of the other side. When a Jew reads the New Testament, the Jew understands that the Christians are the allies. And when a Jew reads the Quran, the Jew understands that the Muslims are the enemy. And that has been my stand all along. The problem is Jews don't read the Quran. Jews don't read the New Testament. And like I said before, Jews don't read the Old Testament. Now, there are a number of quotes which we worked on today. And by the way, in deference, I owe a lot of thanks to Gordon MacDonald for working very hard with me. We worked almost 4 hours today on this. And I'm going to be going through some of these quotes with the, like I said before, I'm not good at PowerPoint. But we will be going through some of these quotes as we go along. The New Testament, and this is going to be at the very end, and we'll see it at the very end again, but it bears repeating. In Galatians 4, verse 25, it says, Hagar, and Mount Sinai, which are in Arabia. Now, you see, Jewish people don't like to do anything that the Christians have adopted. But on the other hand, you have a classic example of the fallacy of this, where Helena, the mother of Constantine, goes to Bethlehem, builds a church, she goes all over, builds churches, then she goes down to Sinai Peninsula, and some Bedouin says to her, oh, it's over there. And so she builds the monastery at Santa Caterina. How many people have heard about Santa Caterina? And It could not have been Santa Catarina because Santa Catarina was part of Egypt. Sinai was an Egyptian bastion, and the Great Desert is not Sinai. And the Great Desert is not the Negev. By the way, you remember Lawrence of Arabia? My mother, rest in peace, used to call me Avi of the Negev. One of the things I'm going to try to show this evening is that the Great Desert is Saudi Arabia, and you see it right in front of you at the heart of the map. One of the things I have become firmly convinced about is that the children of Israel wandered for 40 years, not in Sinai, not in the Negev, but in what is known today as Saudi Arabia. And that includes Yemen. By the way, the Caldwells are absolutely convinced. They've reconnoitered all of the Saudi peninsula, the Arabian peninsula, and they say that they have found proof of Jewish, or shall I say, the Israelite travels of 40 years throughout the Arabian Peninsula. Now, of course, in those days, the rabbis did not have GPS. And by the way, you know the joke about Moses. He wanted to take us to Canada. And the children of Israel, after 40 years in the desert, said, "Moses, our leader, where are you taking us?" And he was trying to say Canada, but he was a stutterer. So he said, Canaan. So he went to Canaan. Okay, so what I want to do is I want to start. My jokes are almost as bad as John Leffler's. Okay, now what I want to do is, see, now here, Israel is in slavery here. And 40 years to go around in this thing here, I mean, you cannot go 40 years here. And so this Christian group of people, the Caldwells, they explained that the Exodus basically was through Sinai to Nineveh, which is about here. And there is a land bridge, which if the waters part, and there are ways that the waters can part, that the children of Israel went into here, and then Mecca, Medina, and Mount, it's called Jebel al-Luz. Luz is a nut. It's like an almond or a walnut. And it's called Jebel al-Luz. It's also called Jebel Musa, the mountain of Moses. It's also called Mount Horev. Okay? Now, Horev is a very interesting word because the derivation of it is the sword. Okay? The flag of Saudi Arabia is the sword. And so it's in the New Testament, Galatians 4:25. By the way, I spoke to a Druze. You know, there's a group in Israel called the Druze. They have another religion. They're an offshoot of a Shiite Islam. They broke away 1,000 years ago. And the reason they broke away from Islam was Islam says that Muhammad was the greatest prophet. And the Druze say, no, Jethro was the greatest prophet. And so they are considered heretics and infidels, and they are massacred by the Muslims. So I knew someone through my wife's job, a Druze guy, so we started talking. Now, Druze do not talk about their religion. The Druze religion is a secret religion, and they don't share it with anyone. But I asked him, I said, listen, I have to ask you a few questions. If you can't answer, don't answer. If it offends you, don't answer. But I want to ask you a few questions. You know, in the Torah, it says that Jethro was the father-in-law of Moses. Now the Druze say that they don't believe that Moses actually married Zipporah, the daughter of Jethro, as it says in the Torah. But they did confirm, according to the Jews' faith, that Moses and Jethro worked together. They officiated together in the ministry of Jethro. What is Jethro? Jethro is the high priest of Midian. So I come to the rabbis and ask them, where's Midian? It's not in the Talmud, so they don't know. And actually, the Bible gives hints at where Midian is, but what I'm doing tonight is I'm connecting the dots tonight. By the way, I say Midian is Medina. Now, ask any Saudi, ask any Arab who lives in the Saudi kingdom, what is one of the names of Medina, and they will say Yathrib. Yathrib in Arabic is Jethro. Another name for Medina, one of the two holy cities of Islam, is Manawarat. Manawarat comes from the word menorah. You know, Exodus 25? And you will see a little later pictures. I've never done this before, so I don't have all the pictures that I needed, but the Caldwells took video footage, incredible pictures, stills and video footage of footprints thousands of footprints that became petrified in the desert, as well as menorahs, which were inscribed in the rocks everywhere. Even then, the Jews were very guilty of graffiti in the desert. And so this visit to the Caldwells really put me into turbulence 6 months ago. And so now I'm coming out with this. Again, this is the first time ever that I'm really doing a full teaching on this. So what I want to do is I want to go back to the Bible, and I want to start with Genesis. And some of you have heard my teachings in the past about the difference between Isaac and Ishmael, the difference between Jacob and Esau, what was the chosen. By the way, if you're a Christian, you know the chosen genealogy is Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We're not talking about Ishmael and Esau. But of course, the Muslims talk about Ishmael and Esau. So what I'm trying to do, like a lawyer in court, is to go through the Old Testament, work my way into the New Testament, show you what the Druze are saying, that indeed Jethro did officiate in Saudi, what was Arabia at the time, that Moses did work with him, and that the God of the Druze is not the same as the Islamic God, Allah al-Ilahi, which is the God of the moon. How many people know that Allah of Islam is the God of the moon? Okay, and we've spoken about it, and it's on my teachings outside. So what I want to do is I want to go back to Genesis. Genesis 15, 18, this is my very first verse. In the same day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, unto thy seed have I given this land, from the river of Egypt unto the great river, the river Euphrates. So what we're going to do here is we're going to talk about borders that I believe are borders that were promised to the children of Israel. And, of course, the Muslims say it's for them. Okay, then Genesis 16, 1 to 12. You'll bear with me. This is a lot of reading here. I didn't want to paraphrase this because we're going to be very legal here, like in court. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, bore him no children, and she had a handmaiden, an Egyptian, whose name was Hagar, or Hagar. And Sarai said unto Abraham, behold, now the Lord hath restrained me from bearing. I pray thee, go in unto my maid. It may be that I may obtain children by her. And Abraham hearkened to the voice of Sarai. And Sarai, Abraham's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, after Abraham had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan, and gave her to her husband Abraham to be his wife. And he went in unto Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her eyes. And Sarai said unto Abram, my wrong be upon thee. I have given my maid unto thy bosom. And when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between me and thee. But Abraham said unto Sarai, behold, thy maid is in thy hand. Do to her as it pleaseth thee. And when Sarai dealt hardly with her, she fled from her face. And the angel of the Lord found her by a fountain of water in the wilderness, by the fountain in the way to Shur. And he said, Hagar, Sarai's maid, whence camest thou? And whither wilt thou go? And she said, I flee from the face of my mistress Sarai. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, return to thy mistress, and submit thyself under her hands. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, I will multiply thy seed exceedingly, that it shall not be numbered for multitude. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, behold, thou art with child, and shall bear a son, and shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord hath heard thy affliction. And he will be a wild man. Now, by the way, in Hebrew, Pere Adam does not only mean a wild man, it means a donkey, an ass, a wild ass of a man. It's very important, because when you think of a wild donkey kicking in all directions, you cannot get near a wild donkey when it's kicking. That is Ishmael. And he will be a wild man. His hand will be against every man, and every man against him. And he shall dwell in the... Okay, now this is a mistranslation, and I don't blame it on the King James, because the Jewish translation into English is also wrong. It says, he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren. That's not wrong. It says, he shall dwell in the face of his brethren. You know the American slang? Hey man, you're in my face? You better get out of my face, or that means war? Okay, well that comes from this verse from Genesis 16. Now, I've done this so many times here at Koinonia House. The Islamic tradition is to kill the Jew on Saturday. We don't have time for this, to go into it deeply today. Kill the Jew on Saturday, kill the Christian on Sunday, kill the Hindus and the Buddhists any day, kill the blacks, and then, not necessarily in that order, the Muslims kill the Muslims. In other words, this is the perfect, imperfect, the most tragic fulfillment of this prophecy that Ishmael will be a wild donkey and his hand will be against all his brethren's hands. Now, again, we don't have time to go into today. I'm just doing this like in one sentence. This may be a shock and may be offensive to some of you, but one of the things I say is that Allah is not God, Allah is the devil. Because if we are all in the image of God, and God loves all his children, all human beings are in the image of God, and anyone who takes the life of another human being, it says in Genesis 9, his blood will be demanded in return because all human beings are in the image of God. We are all God's children, and God loves all of us, and God mourns for all of us. Now, Allah, who is the moon god, the war god, and the sword god, a pagan god, I call him the devil, by the way. I call Allah Satan, Lucifer. By the way, you have to understand, I'm a Jew, and I go to the synagogues, and I cannot preach this, because Jews do not believe in the existence of a fallen angel, Satan, Lucifer, who said that he was greater than God. That is Christian theology. By the way, what is the motto of the Muslims when they pray? Allahu Akbar? Allahu Akbar doesn't mean God is great. Allahu Akbar means Allah is greater. So the devil is calling out in Islam. And you see the moon crescent on top of their mosques. That is not God. That is the moon god, a pagan god, forbidden to us. We're going to get to it. Forbidden to us in Deuteronomy 17. Anyone who prays to the moon, the sun, and the stars should be taken to the gates of the city and stoned. That means we have to stone all the New Agers. But that's okay because they're already stoned. Now, if Satan says he's greater than God and Satan hates God and we human beings are in the image of God, then Satan hates us. And Satan wants every human being dead. Satan wants to see the Jew, the Christian, the Hindu, the Buddhist, the black, and the Muslims all dead. That's the plan of Islam. And my message today is basically portending the termination of Islam. Islam has to be stopped. Islam will not stop until it's stopped. So I've done 6 teachings here. This is the 7th teaching. I hate to use the word lucky number because lucky is not a Christian word. But this is the teaching which gives us the operational aspect, I believe, of how Islam is going to be terminated. For the good of the Muslims, Islam has to be terminated. For the good of the Germans, Nazism had to be terminated. For the good of the Japanese, Tojo fascism had to be terminated. For the good of the Russians and the Chinese and the Cambodians and the Cubans, communism must be terminated. And this is my message. So I would say that this is perhaps one of the most prophetic verses in the whole Bible, one of the most tragic and fulfilled verses of the Bible, of the wild man. And this is never preached in the Jewish synagogues. Okay, Genesis 17. Now you know that Abraham was 86 when he went into Hagar. When he was 99, we see this following story here, Genesis 17. And God said unto Abraham, as for Sarai, thy wife, thou shalt not call her name Sarai, but Sarah. By the way, the H in Hebrew stands for Hamonim, which means the multitudes. That's why Abram becomes Abraham, and Sarai becomes Sarah. You have a hey for the word Hamonim, which means the multitudes. And I will bless her and give thee a son. Don't forget, she's 90 years old and Abraham is 99. Well, you know what it says in the New Testament, nothing is impossible in the Lord. Yea, I will bless her and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of people shall be of her. Then Abraham fell upon his face and laughed. By the way, Isaac means laughter. And said in his heart, shall a child be born unto him that is 100 years old and shall Sarai that is 90 years old bear? And Abraham said unto God, oh, that Ishmael might live before thee. In other words, Abraham was a realistic man, and Abraham would have been perfectly satisfied if he had only one son, Ishmael, from his handmaiden. He loved Ishmael. Let us not believe for a moment that Abraham did not love his son. By the way, I don't want to ask anyone here, this is a hypothetical remark, if any of you here have a number of children and say one of them is a little on the wild side, a little bit of a donkey there, but you're still going to love that child. Maybe you're going to love that child more than the so-called normal children. Don't forget, Jesus did not go after the 99 sheep. He went after the 100th sheep, the lost one, the wild one. And you guys are the wild branches anyway, so it's okay. And Abraham, it's John Leffler every time. And Abraham said unto God, "Oh, that Ishmael might live before thee." And God said, "Sarah, thy wife, shall bear thee a son indeed, and thou shalt call his name Isaac. And I will establish my covenant with Isaac for an everlasting covenant, and with his seed after him. And as for Ishmael, I have heard thee. Behold, I have blessed him, and I will make him fruitful, and will multiply him exceedingly. 12 princes shall he beget, and I will make him a great nation." Is God a liar? Did God keep his covenant with Ishmael? I mean, in a way, it's a tragedy. But after we save all the Muslims, it'll work out. "But my covenant will I establish with Isaac, which Sarah shall bear unto thee at this set time in the next year. And Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, which she had..." Okay, we're going to the next subject. We're going to get to that in a moment. So the point I'm saying here is Abraham, at this point, has two sons. He's going to have more children later with Keturah. We're going to get to that. But there are two sons. Abraham obviously loves Ishmael, because for the first 13 years, that was his one and only son. And then comes Isaac, and God says to Abraham, it's Isaac, through Isaac your seed will be called. Okay? Now let's look at something here, which is kind of, if you read the King James in English, you kind of miss it, but got to read it in Hebrew. "And Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, which she had borne unto Abraham, mocking." Now the word in Hebrew, how many people remember that I've taught this before? Okay, there's a few hands. The word in Hebrew is litzachek. Litzachek does not mean mocking. We're going to show you a verse in a moment later about Rebekah and Isaac when they went to the land of the Philistines. And you know the story about how a man had a beautiful wife and he didn't want to be killed. So he would tell the nations where they were passing through, said, "Oh, this is my sister." Because if he said it was my wife, they'd kill him and take her. So if it's my sister, so they let him go. So anyway, so the king of the Philistines is a peeping Tom. I think it's in the next reading. So the king of the Philistines looks through the window, and he sees Rebecca and Isaac sporting. That's the same word. It's a chek. So what we see here with Ishmael was that he was basically sodomizing his brother. In other words, you have to remember, Isaac is now about 3-4 years old. He's being weaned from his mother's breast. He's having normal food. And this is the cause for a big celebration. Today it's called the Bar Mitzvah. And I wonder who the caterer was. And that's very Jewish humor. Anyway. And so Ishmael, who is the alpha male, who's about 16, 17 at the time, wants to make sure to everyone, especially to the 3-4-year-old little brother of his, who's the boss. It's called the alpha male. And so he's sodomizing his brother or sexually molesting him. And Sarah sees this. And so Sarah says to Abraham, "Wherefore she said unto Abraham, cast out this bondwoman and her son, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, even with Isaac. And the thing was very grievous in Abraham's sight because of his son. And God said unto Abraham, let it not be grievous in thy sight because of the lad and because of thy bondwoman, and all that Sarah hath said unto thee, hearken unto her voice, for in Isaac shall thy seed be called." Now let me ask you a question. Do you think Abraham was happy to kick out his 16-year-old son and send him out into the desert? I mean, Abraham had to be completely destroyed. I mean, it wasn't Sarah's son, but it was Abraham's son. So if you believe in the Bible, and you believe in God's word, then God's word is listen to Sarah and get rid of Ishmael and send them away. "And also the son of the bondwoman will I make a nation, because he is thy seed. And Abraham rose up early in the morning and took bread and a bottle of water and gave it unto Hagar, putting it on her shoulder and the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba, and the water was spent in the bottle, and she cast the child under one of the shrubs, and she went and sat her down over against him a good way off, as it were, a bow shot, For she said, let me not see the death of the child. And she sat over against him and lift up her voice and wept. And God heard the voice of the lad. And the angel of God called to Hagar out of the heaven and said unto her, what aileth thee, Hagar? Fear not, for God hath heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad and hold him in thy hand, for I will make him a great nation. And God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. And she went and filled the bottle with water and gave the lad drink. And God was with the lad, and he grew and dwelt in the wilderness and became an archer. And he dwelt in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother took him a wife out of the land of Egypt. Don't forget that Hagar was from Egypt. So, what do we see here? We see the forefather of Islam. By the way, the forefather of Islam is Abraham, but it's also Ishmael. They don't see Isaac and Jacob as their forefathers. They see Ishmael as the forefather. What do we know about Ishmael? That he's a pere adam. He's a wild donkey. That is if you believe the Hebrew Bible. What do we know about him? He is a sexual pervert because he has sodomized his brother. I mean, think for a moment. Could Sarah say to Abraham, send them away? Unless it were for something really terrible. You know, here in America today, if a kid sodomizes his brother or sister, you know, he goes to rehab. You know, in America, you have something called rehab. In those days, there was no forgiveness for those things. Are you with me? So God is making now a lineage. He's making a genealogy. And the genealogy is Abraham, Isaac, not Abraham, Ishmael. But the Muslims say Abraham, Ishmael. See, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to draw a dichotomy here between what the Jews and the Christians together believe and what the Muslims believe. Okay, let's go to Genesis 22. And it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham and said unto him, Abraham, and he said, behold, here I am. And he said, take now thy son, thy only son, Isaac, whom thou lovest. Okay, there's no more Ishmael here. And get thee into the land of Moriah and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of. In other words, Abraham is 100 years old, and according to the Jewish Midrash, the Jewish tradition, at this time, Abraham must have been about 120, 130, and Isaac must have been about 20, 30 years old. And by the way, in the Jewish tradition, in the Jewish Midrash, it's not in the Bible, but the rabbis say that when Sarah heard that Abraham, her husband, took her one and only son Isaac to offer him on Mount Moriah, that she died from a heart attack. That is in the Midrash. I mean, there's no mention. There's like it skips over a period, and then all of a sudden it says Sarah died. And so the rabbis have to come up with that logical explanation. Why would Sarah die? Because her crazy husband is going to burn her only son at the stake that she bore at age 90. I mean, think for a moment. If you're a 90-year-old woman and you bear a child to your husband, he takes him off to the mountain to burn him. Because in those days, I mean, don't think today as a Christian or a Jew. Think as a pagan 3,500 or 4,000 years ago, that the first child had to be offered to Molech. Because the god at that time of fertility was Molech. You had a firstborn, you offered the firstborn to Molech. Don't forget, there was no Judaism at the time. There was no Christianity. There was no Islam. It was just pagan system. Molech was the god. So the Jewish tradition, the Christian tradition is the same. That Abraham takes his one and only son, prepares to sacrifice him, and you all know what happens. God provides a ram, and then in the end, Abraham does not sacrifice the son. Instead, he sacrifices the ram. And this is the beginning, as far as we're concerned, of animal sacrifices. The animal sacrifices are a sublimation of the bloodlust. And God is saying, do not sacrifice your children anymore. Now you sacrifice animals. Okay, what's the Islamic side? I'm going to give you the Islamic teaching now. According to the Muslims, it was not God who said to Abraham, sacrifice Isaac at Mount Moriah. But the Islamic tradition is that there were three devils, three genies. Remember the genies? Remember the magic lamp? You rub the magic lamp and the genie comes out?
I am the genie of the lamp. I will give you three requests.
It says in the Quran, Muhammad, listen to the genies. You know that the Quran was written by a rabbi and a priest. We've been through this before. Okay. We're kidnapped and forced to write the book under pressure. We're promised their release, and then we're double-crossed and killed. It says in the Quran a number of times, Muhammad listened to the jinns. J-I-N-N-S. It's just when you read jinns, you don't know what the jinns are. But when you really want to know what it is, it's the genies. And the three jinns came to Abraham, Hagar, and Ishmael and said, get Ishmael ready for the sacrifice. Does anyone know where? Where was Ishmael supposed to be sacrificed? No, not Mount Moriah. They're not there anymore. Mecca. Because Abraham built the Kaaba, the black stone in Mecca. That's what the Muslims say. And so according to the Islamic tradition, Abraham, Hagar, and Ishmael took stones and threw stones at the three devils, at the three genies. You know, I've got to tell you a story. I was in the Calvary Chapel in Pennsylvania, John Hessler, the pastor. And a gentleman came up to me, very emotional. He was Armenian. And he didn't go to the Calvary Chapel normally, but he heard I was coming, he came. And he came up to me. He said, I've got to tell you something. You know, the Saudis won't let a Jew or a Christian step in Mecca. How many people know that? The Jews and Christians are not allowed, not only into Mecca, into Saudi Arabia. But, I mean, Christians are if they get a special permission to service the kingdom. Now, I briefly, half mockingly, said just a minute ago that the Quran was written by a rabbi and a priest. This is in my other teachings. We don't have time for it today. Because, you know, the Bedouin were illiterate nomads, desert nomads. They didn't know how to read or write. So if they had a God greater than our God, which is, of course, the devil, and if they had a religion greater than our religion, and they were conquering the world, they needed a book greater than our book. So if the Bible is broken up into Jewish and Christian parts, they needed a Jewish rabbi and a Christian priest to fabricate a new book for them. So, according to my information, the name of the rabbi is Ovadia ben Shalom, and the name of the Christian priest was Sergius Bukhaira. And of course, they were dispatched after they finished the work. And so the Armenian came up to me. Are there any Armenians here? Anyone of Armenian background? So if you know anyone who's of Armenian background or somebody who goes to Armenian church, he said to me, anyone who belongs to the Armenian church, the Armenian denomination, knows the liturgy, knows that there is a day of mourning in the Armenian church for the Christian Armenian priest who was killed in Mecca, in the pit where the priest was being kept prisoner. And so the Saudis will not allow Jews or Christians into Mecca because they're afraid that if the Jews and Christians come into Mecca, they will uncover the well where underneath all the stones is the body or the bodies of the rabbi and the priest. So the Islamic tradition, the Jewish tradition, Christian tradition, is Isaac on Mount Moriah, and the Islamic tradition is Mecca, the Kaaba, and that Abraham was going to sacrifice Ishmael. Are you with me? Two completely different stories, two completely different ideologies. As I say, two completely different ballparks, two completely different universes. It's not the same system as the Judeo-Christian system. We'll switch gears here for a moment. As I said before, Allah is the moon god. The Muslims claim that the Kaaba was built by Abraham and that Ishmael helped him to build the Kaaba. The Druze do not confirm any connection. As far as I've been able to reveal at this point, I have not met with the top clerics. They just say that Jethro was the high priest of Midian, which I think meant the Kaaba, because the Kaaba, that black stone, was there from time immemorial. In other words, Muhammad sent his troops in to conquer it from the tribe of Quraysh, which was a pagan tribe, and he wiped them out. That black stone was there. I believe the black stone was there during the time of Moses too. But what the Druze did say is that the God of the Druze is the universal God of all mankind. not the moon god, the war god, and the sword god. Now, I've spoken about this here before, and I'll do it very briefly again. Mecca and Medina had 360 pagan gods. When Muhammad became convicted by the Jews and the Christians that God is a monotheistic God, and when he saw that he was being rejected by the Jews and the Christians, he decided to take the pagan system of Mecca and streamline it. He decided to banish the pagan gods. There were 360. The three greatest gods of Mecca and Medina were the moon, the sun, and the stars. You see on the flags here? The moon, the sun, and the stars. Now, the moon is the father, the sun is the mother, and the three brightest stars in the sky are the daughters, mentioned in the Quran, of the moon and the sun. And for the first 12 years of Islam, the first 12 years of Muhammad, he left the trinity of the moon, the sun, and the stars. And finally, there was a rift with his followers that you promised us a monotheistic God, and so you've got to get rid of the sun and the stars. And so Muhammad finally abolished the sun and the stars. The father was the sun. The son was the mother, and the three brightest stars were the daughters. Allah, Alilahi, Allah, the moon god, the greatest of all the gods of Mecca and Medina, became the god of Saudi Arabia, the god of the Kaaba. And you see it in the flags here. And what I'm going to say now is politically incorrect. The Bible is a very politically incorrect book. Deuteronomy 17, verses 2 to 5. If there be found among you within any of thy gates, which the Lord hath God, thy God hath given thee, man or woman, that hath wrought wickedness in the sight of the Lord thy God, in transgressing his covenant, and hath gone and served other gods, and worshipped them, either the sun or the moon or any of the host of the heaven, which is exactly what I just described to you, the Islamic gods, which I have not commanded, and it be told thee, and thou hast heard of it, and inquired diligently, and behold, it is true, and the thing certain, that such an abomination is wrought in Israel, then shalt thou bring forth that man or that woman which have committed that wicked thing unto thy gates, even that man or that woman, and shalt stone them with stones until they die. Do you know what I just said? What I just said is that Islam is a capital offense. Anyone who prays to the moon must be executed. Am I politically correct or what? I'm politically incorrect, but according to the Bible, that's what it says. And by the way, you know, it's interesting. Our God says to Abraham, sacrifice your son Isaac. And when Abraham passes the test, God gives him a ram and says, replace your son with the ram. What have we learned since then? That never, ever should children be sacrificed. By the way, that's one of the reasons why God blessed the Christians for opposing adult, you know, the abortion. Abortion, homosexuality, all these things are anti-reproduction of human beings. The Muslims say that Abraham, Hagar, and Ishmael stoned the three devils. And yet today Muslim children are blowing themselves up for Allah. Because Allah, the pagan moon god, war god, and sword god, is not God, but the devil who seeks the death of all our children. And Allah is another name for Molech. Because the Islamic people are destroying their children on the fire altar, not of Molech, the fire altar of Allah. Because anyone who straps a dynamite belt is blowing himself up in the name of Molech. See, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to show certain pagan characteristics to the religion then and the religion now. So you see the sun, the moon, and the stars? Okay. Sarah dies, probably as a result of the trauma caused to her by her husband going to sacrifice her one and only son. Then again, Abraham took a wife, and her name was Keturah. Abraham was 137 years old, you know. No Viagra in those days. I don't know how he did it. 137, and she bore him Zimran, Yokshan, Medan, Midian. Okay, where do we see here? Midian. And Ishbak and Shuah. And Yokshan begat Shiva and Dedan, and the sons of Dedan were Ashurim and Letushim and Leumim, and the sons of Midian, Ephah and Epher, and Hanoch and Abida and Alda. You know, you probably read through this when you read it and say, oh, this is very boring, But the thing is, this gives you an idea of the geography. All these were the children of Keturah. And here, listen to this. And Abraham gave all that he had unto Isaac. But unto the sons of the concubines which Abraham had, because it wasn't just Keturah, he had other concubines also. And Abraham gave gifts and sent them away from Isaac his son while he yet lived, eastward, into the east country. See, the east country is Esau and Ishmael. And these are the days of years of Abraham's life which he lived, 103 years. And Abraham gave up the ghost and died in a good old age, an old man full of years, and was gathered to his people. And his sons Isaac and Ishmael buried him in the cave of Machpelah. In other words, Abraham and Ishmael, they had their differences, but for the father, they came together to bury their father. In the field of Ephron, the son of Tzohar, the Hittite, which is before Mamre, the field which Abraham purchased of the sons of Chet, there was Abraham buried and Sarah his wife. Okay, now let's go to Genesis 25. This is very important. Now these are the generations of Ishmael, Abraham's son, whom Hagar the Egyptian, Sarah's handmaid, bore unto Abraham. And these are the names of the sons of Ishmael by their names, according to their generations. The firstborn of Ishmael, Nevaiot, and Kedar. By the way, you guys will forgive me, I live in a new town called Kedar. I was just elected as a member of the board a year ago, so now I'm a member of the board. Condoleezza Rice doesn't like that too much. By the way, when they asked me what was my election campaign pledge to be a member of the board of Kedar, I said that we have in Tel Aviv, just off of Allenby Street, we have a beach called the Jerusalem Beach, but it's in Tel Aviv. And so my oath was that the Jerusalem Beach would be on the shores of the Dead Sea, and Kedar, which is on the way to the Dead Sea, would be the hotel and spa area going to the Dead Sea. So. Nevaiot and Kedar and Abdil, Adbel and Mifsam and Mishma and Duma and Masa and Hadar and Tema, Yetur, Nafish and Kedma. These are the sons of Ishmael, and these are their names by their towns and by their castles, 12 princes according to their nations. And these are the years of the life of Ishmael, 137 years, and he gave up the ghost and died and was gathered unto his people. And they dwelt in from Havilah unto Shur, that is before Egypt. Havilah, Shur is, some people say, Sudan. And they dwelt from before Egypt, and thou goest towards Assyria. And he died in the presence of all his brethren. That's not what it says in Hebrew. He died in the face of all his brethren. So what does it say before? It says in Genesis 16, Ishmael lived in the face of his brethren fighting. And then it says in Genesis 25, he died in the face of his brethren fighting. That's what it means. He who lives by the sword. Okay, so you know who Ishmael is. You have to read between the lines in the Bible and understand what's going on today, commonly known as eschatology, which, of course, Jews don't go into because it's not in the Talmud. And it came to pass, when he had been there a long time, that Avimelech, king of the Philistines, looked out at a window and saw, and behold, Isaac was sporting with Rebekah, his wife. That was what we went through before, Litzachek. By the way, we see the word Litzachek also when Joseph is in the house of Potiphar's wife, she's trying to seduce him, and when he runs away from her and she grabs his cloak and says to her husband, why did you bring this Hebrew lad to mock us, sexually? And then here, and by thy sword shalt thou live, and thou shalt serve thy brother, and it shall come to pass when thou shalt have dominion, thou shalt break his yoke from off thy neck. That's Genesis 27. That's the blessing of Isaac to Esau. Remember Esau, that Jacob took the blessing? And it says, and you shall live by the sword. He who lives by the sword dies by the sword. So I am convinced that Isaac knew exactly who he was blessing when he blessed Jacob. You know, Jacob put on the furry to smell like his brother and everything. Isaac knew. Isaac knew that, and he loved Esau more, but he knew that Esau was a man of the sword. And Isaac gave up the ghost and died and was gathered unto his people, being an old and full of days. And his sons Esau and Jacob buried him. Remember, Esau wanted to kill Jacob. But in the end, they patched up in order to bury the father. Where? In the tomb of the Machpelah in Hebron. Now these are the generations of Esau, who is Edom. Where is Edom? If you've been in Israel, you know it's on the way to Eilat, the mountains just across the Arava Valley. Now again, so you see you have Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the Muslims have Abraham, Ishmael, Esau. Do you see Ishmael and Esau very much in the New Testament? They're kind of disregarded. See, because the Christians and the Jews agree about this. See, I wish I could come to the Jewish people in the synagogues. Every Shabbat, every Saturday, I'm in synagogue preaching as best as I can, but I cannot say the word NT or JC from Nazareth. I just can't do it, you know, because the Jews will throw me out of the synagogue. That's funny. Okay. Now, these are the generations of Esau, who is Edom. And Adah bare to Esau Eliphaz, and Bosmat bore Reuel. By the way, Reuel is one of the names of Jethro. Thus dwelt Esau in Mount Seir. Esau is Edom. Okay, so what I'm trying to show you here is this story is not taking place in China. It's not taking place in Brazil. It's not taking place in India. This story is taking place geographically relatively close to the Holy Land, to the east of the Holy Land. And so you have Ammon, Gilad, Bashan, Edom, the mountains of Arabia. Duke Korach, Duke Gatam, Duke Amalek. Okay, we all hear about Amalek. Amalek is the arch enemy of Israel. These are the dukes that came of Eliphaz in the land of Edom. These were the sons of Adah. And Husham died, and Hadad, the son of Bigad. By the way, a lot of these names sound Arabic because they've adopted these names. The son of Bedad, who smote Midian in the field of Moab. Okay, Moab is right across from Jerusalem. So you have to remember, these tribes are moving up and down the Saudi Peninsula there and into the Holy Land. Okay. So I've given you, I believe, a little taste, how shall I say, the dichotomy of the genealogy of the Bible, because the dichotomy is you either go with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, which is what the Jews and the Christians do, or you go with Ishmael and Esau. You cannot be a Jew or a Christian and say you love the Muslims, the Muslim religion. Because if you love the Muslim religion, what you're doing is you are delegitimizing your own religion. Because you're saying, no, it's not the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You're saying it's the God of Ishmael. It's Mecca. It's Medina. It's the black stone. It's all the paganism that's there. Let's go to Exodus. Exodus 2. Now, Moses, as you all know, is a prince for the first 40 years of his life. And one day, he goes out to look at his brethren, looked on their burdens, and he spied an Egyptian smiting a Hebrew, killing a Hebrew, one of his brethren. And you all know what Moses did. Moses kills the taskmaster. And the story is revealed, and Pharaoh wants to kill Moses. That's one verse. The next verse, now the priest of Midian had seven daughters. All of a sudden, Moses crosses the desert and pops up in Jethro's camp. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you think that Moses, who spent the first 40 years of his life being trained to be the Pharaoh, do you think that he never learned geography? I think Moses, when he fled from Egypt, he knew exactly where he was going. And by the way, in case you didn't know it, Jethro is a cousin of ours. Because all these names that I just showed you, these are all cousins. They're all descended from Abraham. Second generation, third generation, fourth generation. That's about how far it goes. And so Abraham goes straight to his cousin, or his uncle, or whatever, the priest of Midian, Jethro. And he had seven daughters. And they came and drew water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock. And the shepherds came down and drove them, the girls, away. But Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flock. Okay, the racy part I didn't put in here. But the racy part is the girls go home. And they leave Moses languishing out there in the desert. And Jethro says, you mean to say an Egyptian priest is here and he helped you with these other shepherds that were bothering you and you didn't bring him home for dinner? Go out and get him right away. And the next morning, Moses is married to Zipporah. You know, you got to read the Bible between the lines. Of course, that's not in the Talmud either. I mean, I'm trying to wonder, was it by chance that Moses went to Egypt to Jethro? Was it by chance that all of a sudden Jethro says that his daughter has to... I mean, this was a catch. You've got perhaps one of the future pharaohs of Egypt marrying... I mean, Jethro was the big honcho there. He's the priest of Midian. Again, you know, the rabbis don't know where Midian is. They think maybe it's on Mars. Or maybe China or India or Africa or... It's in Arabia. By the way, you know, the Muslims have two great cities, Mecca and Medina. Now, doesn't Midian sound a little bit like Medina? Midian, Medina. And the Muslims call Medina Yathrib, which is also an Arabic form of Jethro. And Menorat, which comes from the word menorah. And the Caldwells, these dear Christian friends of mine, spent 14 years in Saudi, videotaping all kinds of interesting things in the desert, showing the proof of the Israelites' passage 40 years in the desert. And the Saudis, you ask the Bedouin, they'll tell you where the mountain of Moses is, and it's not in Sinai. It's called Jebel Musa, mountain of Moses, Jebel Elos. And you know what? The Saudi army fenced it off. And the Saudi army doesn't let anyone get near the mountain. There are a whole lot of places there that the Saudis have blocked off and nobody's allowed to be there, in addition to the fact that Jews and Christians aren't allowed into the Saudi kingdom in the first place. Okay, Exodus 3, 1, 2. Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law. Okay, Moses leaves Egypt at age 40, and from 40 to 80, he's a shepherd with Jethro. So you don't think that Jethro taught him some of the tricks of the trade? What does it mean to be the high priest of Medina or Midian? I call it the Black Stone, the Kaaba. There was no Mecca at the time. The Black Stone was there in the middle of the desert. And he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb. You're going to see Horeb after the break. We're going to talk about Elijah the prophet and Horeb. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto Moses in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush, and he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. And Moses went and returned to Jethro his father-in-law, and said unto him, Let me go, I pray thee, and return unto my brethren which are in Egypt, and see whether they be yet alive. And Jethro said to Moses, Go in peace. And the Lord said unto Moses in Midian, Go, return into Egypt, for all the men are dead which sought thy life. And afterward, Moses and Aaron went in and told Pharaoh, Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, Let my people go, that they may hold a feast unto me in the wilderness. Okay, I'm going to give you a Hebrew lesson. The word in Hebrew for a feast is chag. How many know the word chag in Hebrew? Chag Sameach is happy holiday in Hebrew. What do you call a Muslim who goes on pilgrimage to Mecca? Hajj. And if he's an Egyptian, you call him a hag. In Hebrew, it's hag. Now, what does the Hajj do? The Hajj goes for 3 days to Mecca, and he goes around the Black Stone 7 times. That's a Hajj. The word Hajj means to go around in circles. In Hebrew, the word hag means to go around in circles. Again, you know, when you read the King James, that's okay, but when you read it in Hebrew, it has a slightly different, it has the possibility of having another meaning as well. Hebrew is a very rich language. And so let's put in the new word. Let my people go, that they may go around in circles in the wilderness. Because that black stone was there. Islam adopted the pagan rites of the black stone. And Pharaoh said, Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I know not the Lord. You have to remember, Pharaoh is God for the Egyptians. Pharaoh has a pantheon of pagan gods. What does Jethro has? Jethro has the black stone, the god of the universalist god, of what the Druze said. I know not the Lord, neither will I let Israel go. And they said, The God of the Hebrews hath met with us. Let us go, we pray thee. 3 days' journey into the desert. Now, I retranslate that to me, 3 days in the desert. What's the Hajj for the Muslims? 3 days around the Black Stone. 7 times around the Black Stone. 7 days Hajj. 7 days around, sorry. 7 times around the Black Stone, 3 days in the desert. and sacrifice unto the Lord our God, lest he fall upon us with pestilence or with the sword. We're going to take our break now, a short break. I'm going to be going in after the break to show you the phylacteries. And 20 years ago, it was one of the reasons I got terminated in seminary, when I said that those phylacteries remind me of the black stone of the Kaaba. And you have to remember, when you think of the Kaaba, it's Islamic after Muhammad conquered it. But it was not Islamic before Muhammad conquered it. It was pagan, and forgive me for saying it, but Jewish, Christian, and Islamic ideologies receive a lot of the origins from pagan roots. And God had a reason for all of these things, and we will discuss them after the break.